Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Howdy, how you? Great to be with you. Sarah's along board. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Steve. I was wondering if you could wear what you wore 18 years ago when you broadcast in Rec Hall this year, too.
I could maybe get a similar style.
I like the throwback. It's the throwback element. Come on.
Oh, I could find something like that, but whether it would fit, that is a big, big problem. I you know, but it's a very interesting suggestion. Now, Dick, I believe, has a closet full of stuff like that, so he's good.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, it'll be a fun night, or a fun. I think it's going to be an afternoon. I'm going to guess it's an afternoon. There's a wrestling match the next day, and you know you have to use some logic as to how these things play out. My guess is it'll be an afternoon game, and the reason my guess is an afternoon game is a wrestling match the next day. You have to turn the building over, especially the fact you're assembling a court in there. You have to turn the building over. So I think that's a tip-off that there's a good chance it's going to be an afternoon game. But we'll see. Now, can I wear something that is 90s? The 90s were not like the 70s or 80s
well,
in terms of fashion.
True.
I thought that
that's
90s
true.
Were kind of a flat fashion era, wasn't it?
I think so. There's nothing really that sticks out about it, but...
No, it's not like the 80s and the 70s now. You're talking about bell bottoms and a lot of different color. And, you know, that was wild. But, I mean, they've been out of Rec Hall now 17 and a half years. And I still wear the same boring clothing I wore 17 and a half years ago. So it really is, I mean, whatever I go in my closet, I guess it will be good enough.
All right. Could be the same thing. That's okay.
It's all good. It's all good, but it's great to see Bruce Parkhill at the press conference today. Bruce meant a lot to Penn State basketball. I did the season that was Dick Harter's final season at Penn State. And when he left, and took a job with the NBA, and he was, by the way, Dick's five-year contract ran out, and Dick was not invited by Jim Tarman to come back. They were not going to renew Dick's contract. So Dick took a job as an assistant coach with the Detroit Pistons. Jack McCloskey was running the Pistons at the time, and he and Dick went back to the days at Penn back in the 60s. So Dick took that job as an assistant coach. And by the way, Coach Harter had a long, long run in the NBA. He was the first ever head coach of the Charlotte Hornets when they were an expansion team. He was the defensive genius behind the Knicks teams that challenged the Bulls in the 90s. And he also did a really good job as an assistant coach with the Celtics. As a professional basketball assistant coach and as a defensive specialist as an assistant coach, Dick Harter was simply outstanding. At Penn State, he got them to the NIT in 1980 and then came up short in expectations 2 years in a row and didn't really fit in well at Penn State, just the way it happened to be. Well, Bruce Parkhill, they were the two finalists for the job in 1983, were Bruce Parkhill and Rick Pitino. Rick Pitino at that point was the head coach at Boston University. And I did a game, Penn State and BU, in which Rick Pitino was the coach in Rec Hall. Ironically, I think in January of 1993. And BU won the game. So the two finalists were Bruce Parkhill, Rick Pitino. Jim Tarman told me later on that the reason he chose Bruce over Pitino, he knew that Pitino was incredibly intelligent, young at the time, but incredibly intelligent. But Jim's thought about Pitino was that if I hire him, how long is he going to be here? 5 years? Four? Three? He didn't get the sense that Rick would be at Penn State for the long haul, the long term. And he also felt that tactically, Bruce Parkhill was outstanding. So he hired Bruce Parkhill with the determining factor being that I think I have a really good coach who's going to be with us a long time. As opposed to Rick Pitino, a really good coach who might be there a short time. Well, Bruce did stay there for 13 seasons. And he really started with an expansion team and slowly but surely built. I remember the first year that Bruce was on board, and they beat George Washington. Jerry Gimelstob was the coach at GW at the time. And it made Penn State's record 5-6. So I go down to do the postgame show with Bruce in the locker room in Rec Hall. And when I went down there, you know, I said something. This is before I started. We started on the air, so we were still in the commercial break. I said, wow, what a great, great win. And he looked at me and he said, Steve, enjoy it. That might be the last one we get this season. Well, that didn't inspire a lot of confidence. Didn't inspire a lot of confidence at all. Unfortunately, he was absolutely right. It was the last win that season. They lost the next 17 consecutive games. I had the thrill of doing all of them. And they then lost the opener at Cleveland State the next season. So they lost 18 in a row. And then they beat David Robinson and Navy 66-64. Now they went from 5 wins the first Bruce Parkhill season to 8 the second. And then in his third season, they got the double digits. Fourth season, they had a winning record, but in the fifth season, they got to the NIT. It was more than just getting to the NIT. It was in his fifth season where Penn State made it to the Atlantic 10 tournament championship game at Rutgers. Penn State had won games over UMass and West Virginia to get there. And it was UMass with John Calipari, by the way, to get there. And they lost the championship game 70-66. In fact, it was 69-66. Tom Hovas had an open three at the top of the key to tie the game, to send it to overtime, with an NCAA bid in the line. It just went off the back flange, and then Tommy Savage made a free throw at the end to make it 70-66. The next year, Penn State had a really good team, but they lost in the semifinals of the Atlantic 10 to UMass, again, John Calipari's team. It was the night that Hank Gathards died. I remember specifically I was doing the game at the Palestra. And that team ended up winning 25 games. They did not get an NCAA tournament bid. They went to the NIT, went to the NIT Final Four, beaten by Vanderbilt in the semifinals. Then they beat New Mexico in the third place game. They won 25 games. But then in 1991, this is after it's been announced that Penn State's going to go to the Big Ten. Penn State goes through and ends up being a four seed, wins the opening game of the tournament against Rhode Island, then beats Temple in the semifinal. George Washington upset UMass. UMass was the number one seed going in. This is what John's really starting to get UMass going at this point, Calipari. So the championship game, because it's a four against a five, is in Rec Hall. And this is to get to the NCAA tournament. So Penn State has an opportunity now to do what Rutgers did to Penn State 2 years earlier. Home court their way into the NCAAs, and Rutgers did that. Huge crowd shows up at Rec Hall. Not quite a sellout, but a really big crowd. It was like, you know, better than 6,500. Rec Hall at that point held 7,200. And Penn State blows out to a huge lead. I mean, huge. Up 20-plus points in the first half. Big lead at halftime. Second half, maintained the big lead. And finally, in the last, like, 2-3 minutes, George Washington hit some shots, including a shot at the buzzer by Ellis McKinney. And they won the game. You'll see the final score is 81-75. It's a six-point game. That was not a six-point game. That was a game I never once thought in the second half is maybe George Washington chipped away here and there, and then Penn State pushed it back. They chipped away here and there and pushed it back. I never once thought Penn State was going to lose the game. Not one time. So that was the final that was the final Atlantic 10 tournament game. The final Atlantic 10 game, period. Bruce then had to guide So they then had to go through an independent year as a transition year. Because actually, the original thing about the Big Ten was Penn State was supposed to get in like 95, 96. They're supposed to get in football in the 95 or 96 season. Well, Penn State worked hard and in conjunction with the Big Ten, moved the doggone thing up and got it to the 92-93 season. But in 91-92, Penn State had to play an independent schedule. They won 21 games, but you're cobbling together a schedule that included Bowling Green, Butler, Miami of Ohio, Old Dominion, home and away. They had home and aways with Old Dominion, home and away with Butler. I mean, Bruce did the best he could to cobble together a schedule. Now you go into the Big Ten. It's like starting all over again. Bruce has already started a program once in his career. Now he had to start all over again in the Big Ten. Freddie Barnes, Money Brown, Dave Deggett had graduated. So here he is now. That's Indiana over there. Number one. Michigan, Fab Five. Michigan State, Judd Heathcote. Illinois, Lou Henson. Iowa, Dr. Tom Davis. Minnesota, Clem Haskins. Ohio State, Randy Ayers. Purdue, Gene Cady. Now you're starting all over again against these established programs. I mean deeply established programs. The upgrade in competition from the Atlantic 10 to the Big Ten in the 90s is dramatic. The Atlantic 10 has become a really, really good basketball conference. And he had to start over again. In the same job, he had to start all over again. And he did. By his third season in the Big Ten, Penn State was 9-9 in the league because they played 18 games back then. And once again, we're back in the NIT. They went all the way to the semifinals again. They beat Miami in the opening round, down 20, 14 minutes to go, rallied and won. Then went to Lincoln, played Nebraska, down 12 second half, rallied one. Then went to Iowa, And Pete Lisicki hit a three-point shot literally at the buzzer to win the game. Then they lost in the semifinal to Marquette in a game that Penn State led and had control of and lost control of it. And then beat Canisius with John Beilein as the head coach for third place. So, and then Bruce after that decided to retire. But twice in his career, Bruce Parkhill had to take a program and rebuild it twice. Hard to do. He did it. It was great to see him at the press conference today. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Hey, it's summer markdown at Front Street Motors at the Wall in Sunbury. Mike, what's going on?
Gary, for 2 days only, Thursday and Friday, 9 a.m. till 10 p.m., we are slashing prices. Discounts of up to $8,000 under book value.
And to top it off, here at Front Street Motors at the Wall in Sunbury, we are giving away two $1,000 Visa cards.
Hey, that's awesome. They can use this for back-to-school shopping, laptops, computers, no tablets, or you know what? Just use it for yourself.
Mike, I'd take my wife to the beach, and there's no purchase for this contest. Come in all week, get registered for this, and save on Thursday and Friday on this summer markdown.
And we are the home of the second chance finance. No credit, bad credit, divorce, bankruptcy, no problem. Come down to Front Street Motors. We'll help get you done.
Thursday, Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. The deals are hot. The prices are low. We are ready to get you down the road in that new car, truck, or minivan.
Front Street Motors at the Wall in Sunbury.
Okay, so I'm listening to the promos today for the Lawrence show. Do you have that ready?
Yeah, I'd have to look it up. Which one are you hearing?
The one about his producer.
Oh.
I mean, really? I mean, I found that to be, I mean, now he's become an incredibly valuable member of the Lawrence team.
Yes, his return tomorrow.
Yeah. Huh. Well, I mentioned that on Friday's show, Mel Proctor, okay?
This is State. Their defense has answered the call all night. Here it comes. One play for the national championship.
Fourth and goal from the 13. Perriman's pushed to the left. Blades is wide to the right. Back goes Testaverde trying to win it. Throws into the end zone. It's intercepted again. Picked off by Pete Gustafopoulos. And Gustafopoulos has gift-wrapped the Penn State national championship.
In the paper, all we heard was...
And that was Mel Proctor. He'll be on the show Friday. Like I said, he had one of the more dramatic calls in the history of Penn State football. He wrote a book entitled, I Love the Work, But I Hate the Business. Now, he's going to be on Friday's show. Now, listen to this. This is the, and Mel, now you're a Baltimore area girl.
I am.
Right? Mel's a legend there, you know, along with Chuck Thompson and Bill O'Donnell and John Miller. I Love the Work, But I Hate the Business by Mel Proctor. It says, and here's the jacket on this thing, all right? Through Mel's eyes, you will experience some of sports' most memorable and magical moments. You'll mostly laugh, but you may cry and shake your head in amazement as Mel describes his run-ins with some of broadcast management's, quote, knuckleheads. A fun read that will delight any sports fan and a classic text that should be required reading for anyone thinking of a career in the world of sports broadcasting. I Love the Work, But I Hate the Business spans nearly five decades of sporting fun right up until today. Kurt Smith, who wrote the book Voices of the Game, Mel Proctor is one of the best ever sportscasters. The book shows why Mel is as nimble and artful on the printed page as he is on the air. Ron Darling, baseball commentator, former Major League player, says you'll enjoy this read because it's impossible to not enjoy Mel's company and or his anecdotes. Okay, which is great. Mel Proctor has called baseball television radio for teams including the Orioles. Big smile by you. Nationals, Padres, Texas Rangers, as well as basketball play-by-play for the L.A. Clippers. Sorry, Mel. The Nets and the Washington Bullets. He was with the Bullets for a long time. He has also worked at various networks, including Fox, NBC for the NFL and college basketball, CBS for the NCAA basketball tournament, TNT, TBS, college football, boxing, and the Goodwill Games, and home team sports, which, of course, you're very, very familiar with. Mel even enjoyed a brief acting career, portraying fictional reporter Grant Besser in 5 episodes of Homicide: Life on the Street. Today, Mel runs a sports media training company that trains athletes, executives, and coaches how to work with the media. I think that will be a fascinating Friday guest. News coming up out of the hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Well, Sarah, I don't know about you, but I suddenly feel ill. Maybe I'll have to, I have to record. Now, people will realize when I'm done, I have to record a promo here after every show.
Right.
What do you think? Do you think I need to return the favor?
Maybe we're going to sound some horns as well.
Yes, I think maybe we should. Now, do I use the words crack producer, or do I come up with my own version?
That I can't tell you.
I
think there's a lot of adjectives you could come up with.
Yes, there are. Yes, you are correct. Trading deadline. It's been slow. The Red Sox made their deal, obviously, dealt Jake Peavy. And I told the Jake Peavy story yesterday, which was fun about when the Padres dealt him to Chicago. But it looks like Bud Norris is going to the Orioles. So that's going to be one thing. And Bud Norris, a good starting pitcher. He will help out the Orioles. No question about that. With the biogenic, there are two factors. There's three factors. My apologies. Three factors here. Okay. Number one, people will tell you this is the weakest position player trade deadline they've ever seen. If you notice who's moved so far, it's been Jake Peavy to the Red Sox, Bud Norris to the Orioles, Veras to the Tigers. The only position player that's moved is Jose Iglesias. And it's a position of strength in the Red Sox organization on their younger players, so they felt they could do it. They didn't want to give it Will Middlebrooks. But you notice pitchers have moved so far. And the Orioles gave up a prospect, L.J. Hose, and another prospect that they have not named yet. And Hose is a Triple-A Norfolk, and he's hitting 304. He's going to move. But that's what's moved. That's been it. The three factors are weakest position player trade deadline group ever. That factors. Number two, with the second wild card, more teams are in it, thus feel that they are buyers or staying steady and not sellers. And number three, the unexpected, the biogenesis suspensions, which could be coming as early as tomorrow. The union evidently knows who it is. They're not releasing it, but evidently Major League Baseball, Bud Selig's office, they have told the union which players are going to be suspended. And there are fears, you know, based on the list that was leaked out. You know, beyond A-Rod. Okay, let's get A-Rod off the table. Let's get him off the table here because obviously we know he's one of the names. But he might not be suspended tomorrow. That might be a different day and time. but he might not be suspended tomorrow. Nelson Cruz is certainly one of them. So what do the Texas Rangers do? This is the power guy in their lineup. Johnny Peralta. Tigers must feel there's something going on because they dealt for Jose Iglesias. Right? So you don't know. And then Bartolo Colon. Oakland's in first place. I mean, the biogenesis thing. Is hanging over what franchises might and might not do. So that makes it a different trade deadline, but nothing's happening. Phillies haven't made a move. And the Padres got Ian Kennedy from the D-backs. Okay. That's what they got. By the way, Oakland leads Toronto 1-0, top of the fourth. Bottom of the fourth, Cincinnati leads at San Diego 1-0. Detroit won today, pounded Washington 11-1. Orioles at home with Houston tonight, so that made the Bud Norris trade easier. He just has to change clubhouses. Pirates are playing St. Louis again tonight. Rob Beer Temple coming up later in the week. Beat writer, Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Red Sox are playing Seattle. By the way, we had Jason Dombach on yesterday, the general manager of the Spikes, you know, talking about just the business of minor league baseball yesterday. And the Pirates made some minor trade, not the Pirates, the Cardinals made a minor trade with the Indians. And, you know, no big deal, right? Well, Juan Herrera, who was a shortstop for Mahoning Valley in the New York Penn League, is reporting to State College tonight because he was one of the guys dealt between Cleveland and St. Louis. So for the first time ever, a guy that played against the Spikes in the season is going to be playing for them beginning tonight. You don't make trades in the New York Penn League. But they did, and they got the guy. They picked him up because he transferred. In the trade as well. It's the first time it's ever happened. We all looked at it and said, you have to be kidding me. They got Herrera. Huh? Okay. So he's now part of the club here. All right, a couple of other notes for you. I'll talk about the Pro Bowl in a minute. Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods got a look at the site of next week's PGA Championship and didn't like what he saw on the greens. I am so sick and tired of hearing him moan about greens. Woods met with reporters Wednesday in advance of the Bridgestone Invitational at Akron. Played a practice round Tuesday at Oak Hill Country Club in Rochester, where the fourth major championship will be played. Without prompting, Woods brought up the condition of the greens when asked a general question about the course. The greens are spotty. It'll be interesting to see what they do because they were running just under 9 in the stemp meter. So they don't have much thatch to them. So it'll be interesting to see what they do for the tournament and how much that they'll be able to speed them up with a lack of grass. Snap meter, by the way, for the uninitiated, is a device that's used to measure the speed of greens. And he mentioned it's a 9. Usually they like to have them running between 12 and 13 at a major championship. So a 9 means the greens are slow. And, of course, we saw it at the British Open how the greens just baffled the bejesus out of them. All right. That was the case at the Open Championship where Woods admitted that he struggled to adapt to green speeds that got slower as the tournament progressed. So there are a lot of positives, Woods said. I liked how well I hit it, how well I played. Looking back on it, as I was saying on Sunday night at Muirfield, with you guys, the only difference is I just didn't get a feel for those greens the last few days. I didn't make the adjustments. That's my fault for not making the adjustments. You got to make the adjustments. And I didn't do it. Consequently, I didn't win the tournament. Plus, Mickelson played better than you did. Woods has won the Bridgestone Invitational Firestone 7 times. He tied for 8th a year ago. And he's complaining about the greens again. All right, Dick and Milton. Hi, Dick. How are you?
Hey, Steve. I know I haven't called for a while, but I was going to call you a little earlier today, but I was kind of waiting for the Orioles to make a move. I wanted to tell you that, not to make Sarah feel bad, but I'm old enough. I've been an Orioles fan since the 50s, 1950s, so that's a lot of years.
Yeah,
and I just wanted to tell you that actually playing in the American League East with the Yankees and then the Red Sox and Tampa Bay, as good as they are, it's really tough for a team like Baltimore and Tampa Bay to compete. And it just is. I mean, they can be playing as good a baseball as almost anybody in baseball record wise, and only be in third or fourth place in that division because it's day in and day out. It is just it's a beast, the beast of the East. I'll call it that. I mean, it's just tough to compete. So hopefully a couple of pitchers that they picked up will help them because some of their other guys have really struggled. I mean, it's just the way it is.
No, it is. And take, for example, a lot of people focused on the Pirates and the Cardinals, right?
Right.
Big series, top two teams record-wise in the National League. Pirates now have the advantage. But they have the built-in advantage in that division of having Milwaukee and the Cubs, where really – if you can't take 2 out of 3 from them on a regular basis, you shouldn't be in the race to begin with. And that is a big plus. In this division, with the Yankees, the Rays, the Red Sox, and even Toronto to a point, when you're playing, what do they play, 72 divisional games?
A lot.
72 divisional games. You have to fight your guts out in all 72 games. There are no breathers in there. Cardinals in the... Cardinals and Pirates, with the Brewers and Cubs there, they can throttle down and win games.
I mean, it's tough. Even Toronto went out and spent a lot. I mean, they literally rebuilt their team this
yes, they did.
This winter, and they haven't been very competitive for whatever reason. They had a couple injuries early on, I know. But, I mean, it's just tough. I mean, obviously the Yankees had a lot of injuries, but they go out and get guys. I don't think they got anybody today. There was a chance they were going to pick up a third baseman, but I don't think it happened. I didn't see where it did. So
Hasn't happened yet. I mean, because the Yankees and the Red Sox have both been besieged with injuries. The Red Sox pitching staff has been decimated by injuries. I mean, there aren't many teams that lose two closers in 1 year and a 9-0 starting pitcher. So, I mean, and the Yankees, no Jeter, no A-Rod, no Granderson, no Teixeira. I mean, they've obviously been... That's why I think Joe Girardi's done a masterful job this year. He's done a better job than he did when they won.
But they actually did fairly well with the replacements that they had playing out there. A couple of guys now, of course, a couple of those guys have been injured now too. And they get a guy back now and then. He plays a game or two in the case. A couple guys have done that, too. Granderson came back and played a couple games and was out again. Jeter came back and played a game, and he was hurt. I don't think Rodriguez will ever play again. The only other thing I was going to tell you is you were talking about Bryce Jordan, and I have wrestling tickets there, and I went to Penn State basketball at Bryce at Rec Hall. I mean, at Rec Hall I have wrestling, but I went to Bryce Jordan and season tickets there. You know, did you say or did you not say the students are going to be there or not be there on break during that game?
The December 14th game, it's the day after classes end, and it's the transition into finals week.
So they will be there.
They will be there, and what they had to do, though, is that they had to get permission from the Faculty Senate for the game to be in Rec Hall.
Right.
Because it's a study day.
Well, the only reason I mentioned whether they were there or not, because you said about parking. Well, there's always enough parking for wrestling. I mean, they manage it, and they fill it for wrestling, obviously. But I didn't know if the students were going to be there, which would take a lot of cars off of campus. But if they're going to be there, they're going to be there then.
Yeah, they are going to be there. In fact, if there's very few students that have no finals on finals week.
Okay.
So they'll all be on campus. And, in fact, what they're going to do ticket-wise, my understanding is the distribution will be 4,200 general public, 2,100 for students.
I mean, it was the atmosphere. I grant you, I saw a lot of basketball games in Rec Hall, and it was really a great basketball venue as far as – and I wanted to, I'm going to close on this note, and I was going to tell you is I used to tell people – because I don't root for anybody except the Orioles in professional sports. And I said between rooting for Penn State in football and their sports and rooting for the Orioles, I was worn out by the end of the year. I really didn't have a lot left to give to anybody else. Other local teams, the Bucknells and the local teams, the high school teams. But, I mean, because basically that was a whole year, those two teams for me, football. Because football at Penn State was a whole year to me.
Mm-hmm.
It just was. I mean, it took me till March or April to recover from a football season, and that's when you know I just had to reach a point where I couldn't let that go on forever. I just had to stop that because you'd die a young age if you're worried about Penn State football all year long. As a fan, now, that's all
right. I'm thriving on it, so I'm good.
I know, but you understand what I'm saying is, you know,
sure
if you carried the whole season with you from the end of a bowl game until the beginning of the next season.
Sure.
You know, geez, we lost that game, and why did we have to lose that game? And it's you'd rethink the season, and if they'd have done this, and I just reached a point where it was after a while, it wasn't worth it. After 30 years, it just got.
I completely understand that. In fact, today I had to write a mini script today, and I referred to it as the 12-week passion play that is Penn State football.
Yeah. So. I'll let you go. I really enjoy the show when I do listen to it. It's still as good a sports talk show as there is around.
Thank you so much, Dick. I appreciate those very kind words. They mean a lot.
Yeah, we'll see you, Steve. Thanks.
All right. Buzz is driving. Buzz,
but I'm pulling over because if Sam Mitchell's wife thinks I'm driving and talking on the phone, she'll throw my phone out the window. So I have to pull over. Why? I just wanted to share with you something I saw today in my travels, and you've probably seen them, and it's nothing new, but it was the first one I saw on the back of a car stopped at a red light ahead of me. It was a blue football with white stitching, and all it said in the middle of it was O'Brien's Lions.
Right.
And I just thought that was the coolest thing. I mean, that person has moved on.
Well, you know what? I'll tell everybody this.
I thought that was great, you know?
No question. And I'll tell everybody this. For those who have invested themselves emotionally in everything that Joe accomplished in his career and want truth and fairness, you can throw your heart and soul into wanting truth and fairness while still rooting for Bill O'Brien and Penn State. You can do both at the same time.
Well, I just thought it was a great thing to see. And like I say, I'm sure you've seen it, but it was my first one. I hope there's a lot more.
I hope there are, too. Hey, thanks so much, Buzz. Back on the road.
Bye-bye.
We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us here on this Wednesday afternoon. Sarah's done a great job, as always. Appreciate her hard work. By the way, want to take one moment to pass along our deepest condolences to the family of Gene Whetstone. In fact, I've known Jerry Whetstone for many years. Gene Whetstone, a true legend in the sports of gymnastics, who led Penn State to 9 national championships as the head coach, and also back in the 40s was the Nittany Lion. He was the Nittany Lion mascot early in his life. And then went on and became the head coach of the Nittany Lion men's gymnastics team, the U.S. Olympic team. 9 team national championships, Olympic gold. He was a real showman, Gene Whetstone. He understood perfection, but he also understood flash and entertainment. That you had to put on a show for those who showed up to watch your sport. So he wanted the best out of his athletes, but he wanted showmanship as well. And he put all the little touches into an event where he turned a sport, a dual meet, into an event. Because he thought showmanship was an important part of getting people to enjoy the sport of gymnastics. There is an Olympic flag that hangs in Rec Hall. That Olympic flag is for Gene Whetstone. Gene passed away yesterday at the age of 100. Class, a wonderful man, a great showman, a truly great coach. He accomplished a lot in his 100 years.